Welcome back to Future in Focus, a podcast from Schmidt Futures. I'm Wilson Shirley. Today, we're bringing the future into focus with a conversation with International Strategy Forum fellows Gio Saba and Alana Wisby. Alana is CEO of Oxford Quantum Circuits, Europe's leading quantum computing company. Alana's a deep tech entrepreneur, a champion for women in technology and leadership, and a government advisor. She holds a PhD in quantum physics from Royal Holloway, the University of London. Gio is the chief of staff for Representative Ro Khanna from Silicon Valley. He's been named a MENA National Security and Foreign Policy Next Generation Leader by New America and an Aspen Strategy Group Rising Leader. He graduated from Stanford University, where he played varsity baseball, and he earned an MPhil in International Relations at Cambridge University as a Gates Cambridge Scholar. Welcome to you both.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
It's great to have you both here. Before we get into the weeds on tech and policy, I thought we could start with a high-level question, because I was going through your bios, and I realized that you're both in very rarefied fields. Gio, there are only 435 members of Congress, and so only that many chiefs of staff. Alana, you're in a rapidly growing field, but I bet most people don't know any CEOs of quantum computing companies. So tell us a little bit about what these roles are and what you both do.
Sure, it's a big question, but ultimately I see my role as CEO is all about defining and understanding that meaningful outside and aligning that with the meaningful inside of the organization. Now, in a business like quantum, that's a pretty big role, and it's one of leadership. And leadership not just of an incredible team of high-performance individuals, but also leadership of an entire new industry and navigating that. So, and lots of deep thinking about leadership.
Gio, again, 435 members of Congress, they all have chiefs of staff. What does that mean?
Well, each member of Congress gets to run the office in the way that they want to. There's no HR standardization of Congress. There's almost 435 mini startups in Congress where the office gets to set the office policies, gets to hire the staff. And then ultimately the goal is representing our constituents. And doing that, helping prepare the congressmen for meetings, hearings, interviews. And one of those roles, given that the congressman that I work for represents Silicon Valley, is connecting with the emerging tech leaders, the investors, the innovators of our time, and getting to learn about emerging technologies as they're being innovated so that Congress can make sure that we are properly regulating and understanding the new technologies.
So you're both approaching these technologies from very different angles, which is one of the goals of the International Strategy Forum, to bring people together from different geographies, different disciplines, who care about the same issues. So Alana, you mentioned how new the quantum industry is and how it's really emerging right now. So from your perspective, why should the general public, your potential customers, care about the technologies that you're developing and trying to get into people's hands?
There are very few opportunities and technologies that represent true paradigm shift and true transformational change at the level that quantum will provide. So it is important. It's a societal issue because it's one that's going to produce immense change across pretty much every single market vertical out there. I think the last time we probably saw this was, the candle to the light bulb, or and we didn't really fully understand the ramifications of that type of innovation and invention. It's so transformative as a technology that we need to be thinking, of course, about all the tremendous potential and opportunities that will provide, but also be considering the ethical ramifications. And there's so few opportunities in this world where you get to shape that at its coining, right? And this is an industry that is still emerging. And so we have tremendous opportunity to shape the future that we want that industry to look like today.
Before we turn to Gio to ask about the view from Capitol Hill, Alana, I want to dive into that answer a little bit more. So you talked about quantum's ability to transform whole industries, whole fields that will affect the public's daily life. Can you talk about a couple of specific cases that you're interested in and that you think have a lot of potential? And a major theme of this conference is tech for good. So we can get to the negative case later, but what's sort of an optimistic case right now?
Well, at Oxford Quantum Circuits, we are building a brighter future for all that is enabled by quantum. Mm-hmm. And that's a statement of positive opportunity and ethical intent and tech for good as well. Now, some of the opportunities that most excite me, so really understanding for the first time Mother Nature and how she has constructed this incredible world around us. Every molecule, every atom is inherently quantum mechanical. And we can't simulate it effectively. And that is hugely limiting in terms of innovation. And a true understanding and manipulation of things like new battery materials, for example. So we don't understand how to effectively simulate, particularly when you're watching something evolve with time, the band gap, you know, the specific electronic band gap, or new drugs. Like, how does that really interface with the body, and how can we make sure that we are designing not just in a wet lab, which is a really slow R&D type process, but in a computational environment that we can truly understand for the first time how Mother Nature is acting. I would love to be able to, in my lifetime, have helped enable the discovery of a drug to help solve cancer, and to have also been able to help solve the climate problem by being able to have created a new material that's helped with battery storage technologies.
Yeah, and both of those things would transform daily life for billions of people around
totally.
The world.
Yeah.
So, Gio, the view from Capitol Hill, how are policymakers right now thinking of the kinds of emerging and transformational technologies that Ilana and her colleagues are working on?
In two ways. The first is, how can we help foster this innovation? What can government do to help invest in these emerging technologies? So Congress passed the CHIPS and Science Act, mm-hmm. which is $280 billion of science funding, research funding. There's a new tech directorate created at the NSF, and there were lists of emerging technologies that, you know, Congress told the NSF to focus on and provide funding for, and one of those was quantum science. And so that's the first bucket of, how do we make sure that we can invest in these technologies? The second part is, technology is a tool. It can be used for good things and it can be used for bad things. And so we passed the Quantum Preparedness Cybersecurity Act, which helps move the government over to post-quantum cryptography. So
yeah.
That,
can you define that really quickly? Because I think especially with technologies that aren't in the hands of consumers, like Ilana is talking about, these new phrases, we're all going to have to understand what they mean. But I think the general public is aware of quantum computing, but doesn't quite know what post-quantum cryptography means. So let's get into that a little bit.
Basically, with a computer, a quantum computer that will be extremely powerful, it will be able to do really complex math problems that currently protect our data when it's encrypted. Mm-hmm. And so once there's a quantum computer that's moved past classical computing, potentially all of our data that's encrypted currently will be seen by an adversary. And so even though a computer with that capability doesn't exist today, it may in the next 5, 10, 15 years. And we need to protect the data now, because what some of our adversaries are doing is harvesting that encrypted data now with the hopes of decrypting it later once that capability, you know, exists. And so that was partly what that bill did in Congress, was start getting government agencies to budget for this, move over to post-quantum cryptography, which is a way to encrypt the data so that even with a quantum computer, it's still protected.
Yeah. So that was a great overview of where Congress is at right now. But Ilana, you don't live in the United States. You live in the UK. So is the view from the UK any different from a policymaking perspective, or where are they?
No, it's actually very similar. And the UK was incredibly pioneering in setting up early programs in quantum technology, and making sure that it was on government's radar, and that there was both dilutive and non-dilutive funding coming from government as a customer. And actually, the US looked to the UK 10 years ago and replicated some of these early programs. So it is a technology of national strategic importance. So that is something which we are recognizing across the world. Pretty much every government is now putting together a quantum strategy. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, not every country and every government should be building their own quantum computer. And there's huge opportunity for collaboration. That's why we've seen collaborative deals like the UK-US collaboration deal around quantum that was just signed. That's extending out to Five Eyes nations as well. One other point that's interesting to consider is the increase in regulation. So where you have a technology that is of national strategic importance, people are paying attention to things like import, export. And in such an emerging deep tech field, that can present challenges for us, particularly where we need to be collaborating to innovate on a global scale. Governments need to be considering not only how they protect, but also how they protect the industry and make sure that you have the balance and checks and balances in play for both protection, but also cultivating collaboration. And in a really complex geopolitical environment, like that's not simple.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up, because another reason why I'm excited to have the two of you talking together is the need for governments in the private sector to collaborate to find ways that they can advance technologies while safeguarding consumers, constituents. So what are your conversations with government officials in the UK like? What do you want to see more out of government?
For a long time, I've been pushing government as a customer. And this is something America does really well, particularly through DARPA. And the UK has now also set up ARIA, which is fantastic. Government also directly invests in our company. So we have the Breakthrough Fund, which has directly invested into Oxford Quantum Circuits, as well as many different routes of engagement. So we also have something called the National Quantum Computing Center, which is meant to be some sort of spokes and wheels type model to pull together industry and help cultivate collaboration across the UK and also internationally. I also sit on the Business Innovation Forum. So I'm very grateful to have the opportunity to interact with government as an advisor in that way, not just about quantum, but more broadly. And this time last year, I was very privileged to brief Boris Johnson at Number 10 on quantum, which was a fantastic experience.
That sounds like an amazing experience. So turning to you, Gio, on the US side, what are your conversations with the private sector like? And what do you think the private sector is missing right now that you see in DC that maybe Silicon Valley isn't noticing as much?
So I would say that the narrative, particularly for startups and tech companies and the Department of Defense, is that it's actually quite difficult to do business with DOD being a customer. Yeah. And there's been a big effort.
It's a big customer, but a tough customer.
It's a big customer, but a tough customer, yes. And it's a big bureaucracy. And it's been difficult for startups and companies to sort of overcome the so-called valley of death of getting that funding stream that can bring them beyond, you know, once they have a prototype, to make sure that they have a continued customer, you know, with the Department of Defense, to where they can have start earning money and show that to investors to, you know, have their company survive. And so that's been a big focus in Congress is how do we make it easier for companies in these emerging technologies to work with DOD, particularly given in a country like China, where there isn't that same sort of firewall between the private sector and the government, where, you know, the PRC can sort of compel their private companies to work with the People's Liberation Army. There isn't that same sort of relationship in the United States.
Yeah, that's the civil-military fusion policy in China, right?
Right.
Yeah. So I'm glad you brought up China, because this conference is not only about technology and about markets. It's also about the world that we live in, the geopolitical world that we live in, and all the tensions happening. So it's interesting because we know how policymakers are talking about geopolitical competition. They go on TV all the time. They do radio interviews all the time. They do podcasts all the time. How does the private sector think about geopolitical competition? What are the risks and opportunities that it presents?
Yeah, look, my job as CEO is to, you know, make sure I get the best return for our shareholders. Mm-hmm. And we are not an island, right? We need to, the whole point about marrying the inside and the outside. Geopolitics is just as important to me as the CEO in understanding where the opportunities lie, which parties I should be engaging with, shouldn't be engaging with, in the best interest of the company, not just today, but in the long run. And that's been something that's been at the forefront of my mind from day one, with talent, you know, who we hire, where we hire from. From a security perspective, we take security incredibly seriously at OQC, also from an expansion perspective. So OQC is Europe's leading quantum computer as a service company, but we're also expanding into Asia. And that's really exciting. But that was partly looking at government's positioning and thinking about the Indo-Pacific opportunities and the collaboration with the UK and Indo-Pacific strategies. And we felt Japan was the right place for us there. We did, of course, and we continue to assess lots of different regions. And of course, we need to remain very considerate and concerned about how both technology can be used for nefarious purposes, but ultimately the biggest risk for the company comes from people risk. And all of that comes from leadership, and it comes from principles and policies and philosophies that we put deep thinking into, so that when these challenges do present themselves, we don't have to think on the fly. We can turn to really deeply considered leadership principles and code of ethics and take considered decisions quickly mm-hmm. from that place. And I don't think everybody's thinking that way.
Maybe not everyone's thinking that way, but as you go out and seek investors, seek funding for your company, are they thinking that way? Is that something that they're worried about, or are they concerned about other issues?
It's changed a lot, actually, in the last 5 years. I mean, I was approached by a very large company that would not have been necessarily great for our capitalization table in the long run, mm-hmm. but would have been wonderful to have had a significant chunk of money from this entity on the short term. Now, actually, once the term sheet landed, I caused a Cobra meeting and it was banned and stopped. But this is why the NSI Act is now put in place.
Sure. What is that?
So it's the National Security Investment Act that just means that there's especially protecting emerging technologies and making sure that they are, remain in control of that within nation states that are value aligned.
So is that about investment from outside the UK coming in? So
correct.
I guess the parallel in the United States would be CFIUS, is that right?
Yes.
Can you talk about the role of CFIUS and the role of how Congress thinks about foreign investments in critical and emerging technologies?
There's a big concern in Congress right now on foreign investment, particularly from China, and then also reverse CFIUS, mm-hmm. which is U.S. companies and U.S. investors investing in Chinese.
Sure. So an outbound investment screening.
Correct. Yeah. So there's talk about that. But I would say that there are ways in which the U.S. government can make investments. A lot of it is through grants and loans. There is something called InQtel at the CIA, which is basically a venture capital arm that sits outside of the CIA, is a nonprofit. All of those returns go back into the fund. But I would love to see more of those types of funds throughout different agencies, not just for the CIA.
Just to add that, InQtel is a fantastic example. And that's an example where they've also now set up in Australia and in the UK. So it's becoming more global, and they're brilliant initiatives to help navigate, but also where if businesses, private sector is not able to receive funding from its full opportunity, governments do need to be able to support and bridge that gap. And that's a great example.
And that would allow companies to take that funding instead of funding from another entity that may not be valued or interest aligned. And then also, if the U.S. government is going to be spending billions of dollars on these technologies, why not get some of that upside?
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about critical and emerging technologies writ large. So this conversation so far has been very quantum focused. We're at the ISF Global Summit right now, which is focusing on a wide variety of technologies. So what are some other technologies that have you particularly excited, or on the flip side, particularly worried right now?
So another one that comes up a lot in the focus, especially now with ChatGPT and Bard, is artificial intelligence.
Sure.
And that's one that Congress is becoming more awake to. There, you have a member of Congress now reading a speech, and then after the speech, announcing that that speech was written by ChatGPT.
Was it any better than the speeches that member was giving before?
and so, members of Congress are beginning to become awakened to that. And whether it's the potential job displacement, the potential military use cases, but also the benefits, and it's still to be seen what all of those benefits will be. But one of the ways that, I've viewed it, or we've viewed it, is that it's a tool that can be, help augment the human experience, help augment people at work. For example, in using ChatGPT, I was able to give it a few prompts, and it very quickly wrote a piece of legislation, or it could help write very quickly a research memo. Now, obviously, that took some tweaking and refining, and I don't think at this point my job will be displaced.
Speechwriters, definitely.
Speechwriters, maybe, but it still requires a human to go in and make those appropriate tweaks. And so I don't view this as completely displacing humans, but helping us and helping out, just like with any tool.
And now to you, Ilana, what's another technology that you're thinking of?
I mean, I love, and I have lots of friends that are running biotech companies.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's fascinating, particularly where it actually starts interacting with other emerging tech like AI and how we can utilize data sets and start to accelerate the development process, leveraging data and an interconnected world. I think it's just fascinating. And also new fuels, for example. I think that's always really interesting. I think I should be a material scientist.
In another life.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question? What do you think that the US government's done really well when it's thinking about AI specifically? And what do you think it's not done so well? And how do you think we can learn from that when we're thinking about future tech like quantum or others?
The US got social media and privacy wrong and sort of let that technology go out into the open, and we saw a lot of the negative consequences of that. So I think this time around, there is a sense of let's get out in front of the problem before it happens. And so you've seen there's an AI caucus in Congress. You have the Department of Defense putting out AI principles of how we're going to use or not use artificial intelligence. A few years ago, when AI facial recognition technology came out, there were hearings on it. There were, the ACLU was brought in to talk about some of the negative consequences of using facial recognition technology. So it seems like, post social media, post privacy, there is a sense of we need to do something now. Now, I'm not sure if that means we're going to pass legislation. A lot of this we're still figuring out what the consequences are. And it's tough to legislate technology because technology changes. And so you don't want to put something in statute about explaining or describing a certain technology, and then that changes. So that's why, principles is a good first start to think about, broadly how we're thinking about this. I think we can learn that we can't just rely on the government alone. We need to bring in companies. We need to bring in civil society, human rights groups, we need to bring in academics to have a full perspective of how these technologies are going to impact society, not just from an engineering perspective, but bring in philosophers, bring in social scientists to talk about, what are the implications and how do we want to make sure this technology is developed.
Ilana, I'd like you to answer the same question that you just asked, Gio. What do you think the government is getting right? What would you like to see more out of government?
Right now, within emerging tech, we're talking a lot about AI ethics and how we legislate and how we make sure that that's used appropriately.
And the UK has an AI strategy as well. You talked about a quantum strategy.
Yeah,
earlier.
Of course.
Every new technology is getting a new strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. The UK's government's just restructured a little bit as well to make sure that science and technology is even more at the forefront, which is absolutely fantastic. That said, I do think it's too late for AI. Like, we're doing all of this stuff 10 years too late. And I think one of the challenges, and I'd be curious to understand if this is something you see here as well, is the people that sit within government, and particularly within the UK civil service, they're incredible. They're so smart. They're so talented. But it's less than 10% that have engineering and STEM backgrounds, which means that understanding on a deeply technical level and being able to get the kind of cross-functional conversations, which whilst we're here at this ISF conference, is just incredible to be able to have this intersectionality of all of these areas of expertise. I don't know if that's something which is enabled within government based on the skill sets. Is that something that we see here as well? And to your point, that's something I think we should be doing better at.
Sure, getting tech talent into government.
Yeah, totally.
Gio, what do you think about that?
So there used to be a technology office in Congress that would help assist members of Congress and staff, and they had tremendous technological expertise.
Yeah, kind of like the Congressional Research Service, but for technology, right?
Exactly. And unfortunately, that was defunded. There's talks about revamping it, but it hasn't been done yet. So that would be really useful. The number of members of Congress and staff, for that matter, who have STEM PhDs is very small. It is the exception. There is a need to bring more of that talent into government. But the role of a politician is to represent their constituents and take in a variety of different considerations. And so while I think it would be useful for there to be more engineers and computer scientists, you know, as members of Congress, we can't just only think about it from an engineering or technology perspective. The politician has to think about all the different implications from jobs to healthcare to, you know, the technology itself. And so while I think we need more, I don't think we should just have a Congress full of technologists.
Oh, yeah, totally.
It would be quite a Congress.
Yeah.
Yeah, the debates would be much nerdier for a while. But I'm glad that as we wrap up talking about talent, because that's a major focus for Schmidt Futures as well. So I'd love for you both to talk about, in your capacities, leading a company, leading an office, working with elected officials, with your peers at different companies, what do you think makes an effective leader in your field? And what do you look for when you go out and collaborate?
Everything that I do, you know, I have a PhD in quantum physics. If I'm in the lab, something's gone really, really wrong. My focus is entirely leadership. And I look at that always through the lens of values and emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. And I'm very proud to have a team now of 90 incredible team members.
Congratulations.
60 of whom have deep technical expertise. And every single one of them goes around OQC talking about love. You know, these are statements of ethical intent. They're our core values. They define who we are. And I strongly believe that we need to build high-performance companies, the best world-class companies, not just world-class technology. And we can do that through creating emotional climates. Leadership is just creating an emotional climate that stems from either love or fear. And both are powerful. But at OQC, I choose love. And it's an incredible, incredible mantra, an incredible way to lead. And I would love to see government lead with love rather than fear.
Gio, do you think that's possible?
It is possible, and it's something that we should do more of. And I love the way that you put that. In my view, the types of leaders that I admire are willing to listen to others. Mm-hmm. But taking a stand on an issue, being there out front before it's an issue. So it's particularly with these emerging technologies, someone who can see this is where things are headed, you know, with the computer, with, you know, enough qubits, this is how the world is going to change. Not someone that's just going to react once that happens. But then, you know, by staking out that position, also then saying, let me talk to other people. Let me hear what other people are saying. Then making a decision, and then taking a stand, even if that's not popular, or that may not lead to someone's reelection.
Yeah, and it makes people want to work for people as well. So final question to you both, and this is something that we're asking of all the guests on this podcast, is looking ahead to the world. Say it's 2050, everything has gone right in your field. What does it look like? And then flip side, what's the pessimistic case? What are you most worried about for 2050?
Ironically, I think success for quantum is that no one knows or cares that they're using a quantum computer, but that we have solved some of the world's most intractable problems and created, you know, world-changing applications. We have that cure for cancer. We have the understanding of photosynthesis, and we can create new fertilizer solutions. We've created new materials for energy. We've better optimized and understood our data processing needs. We can do that with super low energy because quantum also has energy advantages at scale. So we've got quantum-enabled data centers all around the world, inspiring and creating world-changing innovation. And ultimately, no one knows.
That's great. I almost don't want to ask you what you're worried about after that answer.
What am I worried about? Look, the principle of building a company from a place of love is that we build a great company with great people and we do great things. And that's reflected in our vision. We're building a brighter future for all enabled by quantum. But I am not naive. I fully recognize and take responsibility for the fact that this technology can be used for nefarious purposes. And in a worst case scenario, we've created a world which our technology has been used irresponsibly because we haven't thought ahead, because we haven't had the difficult conversations. And people are scared. I wouldn't be leading OQC if I didn't think that the net positive outweighed the net negative. Wouldn't be committing my life to this, but worst case scenario, I have the humility to say I might be wrong.
All right. Yeah.
Well, I answer it in two ways. The first, so from a political perspective, hopefully we still have a functioning democracy. We still have elections. We haven't had any political violence. We haven't had a president try and run for an additional election. We haven't had a coup. Those are all things that I think are possible, maybe unlikely, but definitely possible, and something that we need to work towards, making sure that our political disagreements remain civil. And then in terms of technology, that the United States is the leader in all of these emerging technologies, or our partners in the UK and in Europe, but that, you know, our friends and partners and in the US, we are the ones who have created these technologies, and we are implementing them with the values that we believe, and that it's not an adversary who is the sort of leader with these technologies with values and principles that we disagree with, that are using these technologies to oppress their populations. And so that is something that, you know, why I think it's important that the US and the UK and governments are investing in this, so that the West is the leader of these technologies.
And those have definitely been the themes that we've been talking about throughout this ISF Global Summit. Thank you both so much for doing this podcast. It's been a pleasure to have you, and looking forward to continuing the conversation.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Future in Focus, a podcast from Schmidt Futures. We hope you've enjoyed these conversations about the future of science, technology, and global affairs. Future in Focus is produced by Caroline Hartman and Brooke Engerman. We'd like to thank our guests for providing their insights and expertise, and all of you for listening. Make sure to follow us on your favorite podcast platform, and stay tuned for more exciting episodes of Future in Focus from Schmidt Futures, a philanthropic initiative founded by Eric and Wendy Schmidt. At Schmidt Futures, we bet early on exceptional people making the world better. We bring these talented people together in networks and prove out their ideas and solve hard problems in science and society. To learn more about our method and the diverse types of capital and tools that we deploy, visit www.schmidtfutures.com.